One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is James Fox, and you're listening to That UFO Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I am joined today by a filmmaker who has written, directed, produced, edited, as I've just been being told, some of the best UFO documentaries you will find, including The Phenomenon and Moment of Contact. Also, his latest, much-anticipated The Program. Welcome back to the podcast, James Fox. James, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Very good to have you on. Finally, this seems like a long time coming, James. And does it feel like that for you?
It's been a rough year and a half. Very intense. Yeah, because it wasn't just like making the film. There were other things going on behind the scenes that I wasn't really at liberty to talk about that added to the intensity of production.
Yeah, and it's a huge pod today, and I'm going to get stuck into a lot of conversation with you. But before we talk about the program, take us through that journey, because as part of that, are you talking about the issues you had with the previous documentaries, and did that coincide with trying to make and release this?
Oh, God, yes. So there were two really, like, making a documentary in itself, just if everything goes perfectly, it's very, very challenging, you know? You want to do better than you've done in the past. I wasn't necessarily trying to compete with The Phenomenon, because The Phenomenon I spent 8 years making, and that covered a lot of history and, you know, from the 40s right up to kind of somewhat modern day, as to, you know, back in 2020. But I was acutely aware of the fact that there are certain expectations. If it's going to have my name on it, I want it to be a really high-end production. And so that requires a level of focus and dedication that just very, very intense. It's particularly on the last, like, for some reason, the last push, the last 15, 20%, it seems like it gets harder. As you push the film across the finishing line, it becomes exponentially difficult just to get it absolutely done, right? Because there's just so many little minute details that one can easily overlook. That make the difference between a successful film and a not successful film. And so that's very intense. But paralleling all this, I had a massive disaster occur with my distributor. My distributor was purchased by, unbeknownst to me at the time, by a much larger company. And, you know, regardless of how well one has done in the past, generally speaking, when you're done making a documentary, you borrowed money from just about everybody. you're always in the hole. I mean, it's just the way it is. I put some of my personal money into it. I try not to do that, but it happens inevitably. So as I was launching, making the program, my distributor was purchased by a bigger distributor, and all my films were either directly or indirectly distributed through this production, through this distribution company, and they stopped paying me. So suddenly I have all my income completely dry up, particularly at a time when I just got on Joe Rogan. I hadn't even paid back all the money that I'd made for Moment of Contact. I'm being told, sit tight. It's under new ownership, and the transition process from the accounting department, it's just going to take a couple little hiccups here. It's going to take a little moment. But in the back of my mind, I had a really bad feeling. Mm. That little voice, it really didn't feel good. And I'm watching, these sales reports come in. I'm seeing my films at the top of the charts, and I'm broke. And I'm not getting money every month. And it was like month after month after month after month. And then I filed a lawsuit. I mean, it felt like somebody was trying to extinguish my career. It was absolutely terrible. And I couldn't talk about it publicly, because if I did, it would be, slander or, there's a legal terminology basically that they could come after me. And apparently somebody did speak out with specifics, and, they had a slapped with a multi-million-dollar lawsuit, and they're still defamation, I think it is. So I couldn't talk about it. So I was like, my lawyer, we were filing a lawsuit out of New York, and he's like, don't talk about it publicly. They'll come after you. These guys have got a bank of lawyers, some huge company. And so I'm dealing with that. And I remember every night I was taking like a sip of whiskey just to fall asleep, because I couldn't believe this was happening. I couldn't believe that this could happen. Like, I'm the most independent filmmaker. The one kink in the armor was the fact that I had a distribution company, but I made the movie myself. They're just distributing it to the various platforms, right? And they just take a small cut of the sales. Well, they're taking everything. And it wasn't just 1 month. It was month after month after month after month after month. It's like a nightmare. It's like a slow motion train wreck. It's happening. And it's happening with all my films. All my income was dried up. And I would go to sleep with whiskey at night, trying to work as much as I could during the day. And then in the morning, I would wake up and I'd slowly thinking to myself, oh my God, I remember a number of times where I was like, oh God, I had a horrible dream last night. I was dreaming that I was getting ripped off and all this terrible stuff was, oh my God, it's not a nightmare. This is really happening. And this was... Yeah. Really going on. And in paralleling that, I hadn't really talked about this with anybody, I was trying to get interviews with sitting members of Congress. The first congressional hearings that happened after 50 years that Andre Carson had put on, and they were like, oh, Mr. Fox, you did the phenomenon? I thought so and so did the phenomenon. I was like, no, I did the phenomenon. Really? Are you sure about that? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure about that. So I'm sending these staff members of Congress photographs of me in production for the phenomenon in China, in Africa, in Australia, me with Senator Reid to prove the fact that I was. And then all these intel guys, the same individual was telling them not to meet with me. Thank God for Christopher Mellon was on the Hill setting the record straight and telling these intel folks, James made the phenomenon. He's the guy. You should be meeting with him. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, so they cut off all my money, and then someone's taking responsibility claiming that they did on the Hill the phenomenon. I'm having to prove that, no, I'm the one that did it. And then I'm having to get these intel folks that I'm trying to get interviews with. It was just like, I couldn't believe it, man. I just felt like somebody was trying to extinguish my entire career. And I had a really good friend of mine, this guy, Jeff Melville. And thank God, like he's such a good guy. And I borrowed money from him just so I could keep going with everything. He trusted me. He knew, I was going to get it. So I remember taking like all this, and I'm not here to air my grievances. I felt like I could only talk about a little bit of it about the time, for people to understand like what really went on behind the scenes during the making of this film. So I took like all my frustration and anger and I said, I'm going to focus this and I'm going to try and create the best possible film documentary I can possibly create. And the end result, I was very happy with it. So anyway, that's a sort of snapshot scene behind the scenes that took place. And this is going to be the most independent release in history that I've ever done. I don't have a distributor. I've had to raise $250,000 borrowed money at the end of it. So the film's done. Okay.
Yeah.
Now the film is done. Just to put it out, you got to spend money. You got to hire, you know, a company for, you know, for promotions and social media and run ad space. I mean, anybody who wants to have a remotely successful release, you have to spend money on your film to get it out there. Right.
Yeah.
So this is all completely 100% independent. And I'm very proud of that. So I'm hoping that, you know, we've eliminated any potential kinks in the armor for another scenario that took place the last year and a half.
I felt that was very important. And for months, while I've been talking to you online or whatever it's been, I know you've had those issues. They've been public. I don't know anything secretive, but I also know how much work you put into making these. And I wanted to start this interview with that because that's a hell of a lot to undertake and have going on. And I remember when I saw folks, even when you'd put online that you needed that $250,000, some folks like, wow, that's so much money. But like you say, sure, you could pop this on YouTube and let it run and get some ad money in. But when people make a Marvel movie with a $200 million budget, they spend the same amount at least on marketing and advertising. A lot of folks don't know that, just to get out there to try and recoup some of that money. So that's all very much appreciated. And I think folks, I'll say it now and at the end, go and get your copy of The Program, is where James has put his money, his life and soul into this. It's almost bankrupted you, like you say, beforehand. So go and pre-order, go and get your copy now. The program's wonderful. The links are in the description as well. And we're going to talk about the actual content now, James, because I've really enjoyed it. I'm very fortunate to get a screener for things like this to interview you in advance. I pre-ordered my copy on Apple TV as well. So folks, I've done my bit. I'm not freeloading off the back of all of you who listen to this and give me these opportunities. But let's get into it then. So the program goes behind the congressional hearings to leave skeptics astounded by new assertions from a growing chorus of high-level insiders who insist there is definitive proof we are not alone. So first off, James, do you see this as a follow-on to the phenomenon or a standalone piece?
Follow-up to the phenomenon. I think it's a sort of natural progression. I mean, I got sidetracked when I did the phenomenon. One of the cases I was including was the Virginia case, 1996, Virginia, Brazil. And I went there multiple times. I edited, I think, about a 15, 20-minute segment. I was probably going to whittle it down to 10 minutes. I'd gotten a translator. I'd done all the translations and put together a decent little, you know, segment. Last minute, I just decided, you know, and I talked about this before, I decided just to cut it all together from the phenomenon, which was a very painful process. In the field, we call it killing your darlings. So I cut that out and I said, I'm going to have to make a documentary solely based on this. So it went from the phenomenon to sort of a side project, which was a crash retrieval case that ultimately I learned in that last time of filming in 2022, I think it was, 2021, 2022. I was filming in Brazil and I found out the Americans' involvement because one of the traffic control officers in the Brazilian military reported the United States Air Force plane that came in and landed in Campinas and without Brazilian government authorization for that. So I learned about the Americans' involvement quite definitively the last filming session. And so anyway, I focused on that. So I sort of put the sequel to the phenomenon on pause, did that crash retrieval case. It was funny actually, because during production of that and during the final phases of editing, I had a few rough cuts. And I remember Lou Elizondo, he was reaching out to me and he was going, you got to send me a copy. I need a screener. I said, well, Lou, the film's not done yet. He goes, I don't care. I need a screener of that. You don't understand who's watching this on the Hill right now. So I'm sending Lou screeners. Little did I realize that, well, a year later or less than a year later, we were going to be having congressional hearings with David Grush testifying under oath as to a crash retrieval program. Never in all my years did I ever anticipate that happening, right? So in any case, so when I got into making the program, those were real inquiries for me. It's like I'd sort of lost track on what had happened from when I'd stopped making the phenomenon back in the end of 2020. And, late 2022 or early 2023, probably early 2023 is when I really started filming production on the program. I just never anticipated that the David Grush thing would happen, a high-level government insider that would come forward and testify under oath that the U.S. government had definitive proof that we're not alone. It's pretty cool stuff.
It's been wild. What's it like, though, making a documentary on any particular topic, especially UFOs, where it's always changing and evolving? Because you must have an idea of, I'm going to make this. But as you do it over, 18 months, something happens, something changes. How do you work with that?
Every time, I got finished with a pretty solid rough cut of the program. I didn't have a title for it for a long time. I wasn't sure what we were going to call it. Actually, the working title we have, I'm looking on the wall right here, is What We Now Know. But that was a working title. I never intended it to be the ultimate title. But, inevitably, there were some new developments. And so I paused and I went back into the field, got the camera crew back together and went to D.C. and went to Pennsylvania. And I actually had an individual fly in here from D.C. from Washington, D.C. to my home in Vermont and do a series of follow-up interviews. And then incorporate that back into the film and, get it out, crank it out as quickly as possible, because things are developing so quickly right now that it's going to become yesterday's news. Right. So I don't think I ever worked as hard and as quickly as I could, to keep this current and relevant.
Yeah, and the narrator, Peter Coyote, so it's written and directed by yourself. Lance Mungia also writes it alongside you. Peter Coyote has got a wonderful voice, and he's obviously worked with you previously on your pieces. He tells us in that introduction that Congress over the last few years has only begun to learn about the UAP UFO topic, the cover-up, the black budget programs. And for you, is that really important to remember, that while we're getting this political progress, a lot of folks are frustrated at maybe the level of knowledge these representatives have, but their knowledge is at the beginning. It's still minimal. They are getting everything thrown at them at once. And is this almost the start of a new fight or a new phase of discovery?
Well, I've been hearing people, like the last congressional hearings we had a few weeks ago, it's a big nothing burger. And, compared to what happened under David Grush, yeah, that was pretty phenomenal. Some people say it was almost too much too quickly. But if you look at what's happened in the last, 7 years, right? Since the end of 2017, that's more has happened since 2017 and where we are at the end of 2024 right now than it's happened in the 50 years prior to that, right? I mean, the last time we had congressional hearings was 1966. So we went from acknowledging the fact that there's a real phenomenon, that it's real, right? We're dealing with something that we don't know what it is. It defies a conventional explanation. It exhibits a technology that's light years advanced from anything that we have, right? All this stuff. And then on top of it, now we're talking about, as of 2023, crash retrieval program. And just a couple of weeks ago, Lou Elizondo testified, and I remind your audience, under oath, there are consequences for lying to sitting members of Congress under oath, like potential jail time, for saying something that isn't true, testifying under oath that we have a crash retrieval program. I mean, let's not forget, I know things don't seem like they're happening quick enough, but man, I've been at this 30 years and the last 7 years have been pretty intense as far as I'm concerned, particularly the last 4 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'm going to be doing the end of year podcast soon and looking back at the highlights already. There's a lot of things happened. It could be even be small things, but these all add up. And then you've got your big milestones along the way. You're very much a boots on the ground guy. You're in the office of representatives, congressmen and women, senators, staffers. You're there in Washington and all round. You must be hearing conversations about some of those behind closed door briefings. Now, this is the stuff that we really want to see and hear. And I wonder what's different from what the public presentation is right now that you're getting to put out from what's happening behind closed doors?
First-handers behind closed doors. People that are actually touching the stuff, working with it. That's happening. I'm convinced of it. And there are a handful of senators and congressmen that know about it. I've met with staff members that have told me they were sat in the room listening to first-handers. So that's happening. But these first-handers don't feel that the whistleblower protections that have been signed into law are doing it. I know there's been a couple of very, one in particular that happened right before I did an interview with Kirk McConnell, where a gentleman that was apparently going to come forward was found dead under suspicious circumstances, young, in his 30s, two kids, wife. So I'm not sure if there was a suicide note on that one or not, but people that other individuals were going to meet. I mean, there's just been, I don't want to spread, rumors, unsubstantiated rumors on this, but I can't say that people are legitimately fearful and rightfully so for retribution on coming forward, particularly first-handers. So a number of them have met with some of the people that I've met with, first-handers, that I've heard some of the stories, but what it's going to take to get them to come forward publicly in an open hearing, I'm not sure. I don't know. Maybe the executive branch has to get involved and provide some level of immunity. That I don't know. I'm not sure.
You mentioned those recent hearings with Lou Elizondo, Michael Schellenberger, Mike Gold, Timothy Gallaudet. There's the four witnesses I remembered. Do you get the feeling the disappointment was people expected first-handers to turn up this time round and we didn't get that, and it almost seemed like things were over-promised and under-delivered rather than the other way around?
Yes. But I wonder I wonder if Lou is a first-hander or not. I don't know. I think there's more to Lou than what we might know or not. I know some people criticize him as a government insider or whatever, but everything that he has said aligns with my research in the field. Has Lou handled some of that debris? Maybe he has. I don't know. He certainly made a definitive statement about a crash retrieval program, and he made that under oath.
Yeah. That was a big takeaway from the day. And you've just mentioned, go on.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm just saying he made a pretty definitive statement about a crash retrieval program. I'm sure he knows more than what he read in a book.
Yeah, I would imagine there's more that wasn't in the book, which again was always going to be a frustration for folks, but time will hopefully tell on that one. You mentioned Kirk McConnell, and he appears obviously in the program. He says himself this is probably the first time he's spoken on camera, or one of the very first times ever, about the UFO UAP topic. He researched it from 2017 to 2024. Can you tell the listeners and viewers right now, why is Kirk McConnell a big player and a big get to have on camera talking about this subject?
Well, Kirk has lived his life in the shadows. He had no intentions of ever coming forward. In fact, I'm trying to get him to participate in just one promotional thing that we're doing when the film comes out. And he's on the fence with it. He's like, look, I don't live my life. I'm not a public figure. I'm behind the scenes. I've been investigating a part of the Senate Armed Service Committee with the high level and security clearances since 2017 and to 2024. And he's reluctantly come forward because he felt that Sean Kirkpatrick and the likes have not done, not been forthcoming, and that he needed to do more. He stepped down from his position this year. And then just a couple months later, decided to participate in the film because he felt like there was a big injustice on what was happening with the people that were coming forward and risking their careers and some could say more than that. And Kirk decided to put his neck out and risk coming forward and saying as much as he could without going to jail, without violating his security oath.
He's a very interesting guy to listen to.
And I can tell you that guy is probably met with first-handers.
Oh, yeah, you get that impression just through the screen, but you know you're watching the guy. He talks about high-altitude systems picking up these things, dropping in from space, coming down, and then returning. And that's something I want to ask you about, James, because that's something that really intrigues me, and I'm sure many of the listeners, that it can be very, I'm guessing, reactive when these things appear, because it's not necessarily that a US Navy fleet is expecting them to be there all the time. However, once you're there and these objects have appeared and they're being picked up by sensor systems, I imagine you can then, with a certain degree of accuracy, follow them. Do you hear much about origins as to where these things then go? For example, Kirk says they go back into space and beyond. Do you know much about where these things go afterwards, whether it goes up and into space or down into the water?
I've heard down into the water, and then I'm not sure what the distance is in terms of when the detection systems or these sensors no longer are viable. But I got the impression that, because I would ask, you know, like, go up into space, what do you mean? Like, well, go up in space to the point where they're no longer detected. So I guess it goes all the way up into space, right? But I definitely got the impression on a number of individuals that I've talked to that they're underwater.
Yeah, I think USOs are something that is touched upon in this documentary. It's a phrase and a keyword I think we're going to hear more about next year. Is the underwater aspect of this phenomenon something that's maybe piqued your interest? You're someone who makes documentaries, not just for the UFO community, but for the wider public. I'm sure that's the audiences you want to capture, but you do, you know, deliver to both, which I feel you do. Yeah. There's a niche. You can also focus in, though, on a niche. You've got the phenomenon and the program, which are still relatively broad. You've got Moment of Contact, which focuses in on Virginia. Would the underwater aspect of this phenomenon be one you would like to look at?
Well, you know, I met with it was a guy, part of the Navy. I want to say it was late 90s or maybe early 2000s for my film Out of the Blue. And he was describing, this is probably one of the first times a witness from the military had described these objects underwater to me. And it was kind of a one-off, but I included it in the film. It's in Out of the Blue, the director's cut of Out of the Blue. That was the first time I'd heard it from a firsthand witness in the Navy. And he had described these big objects doing impossible things in the oceans, that they were detecting these things. But I'd never really dug into it much further than that. And then the second time I heard about something underwater that I found credible, excuse me, was when David Fravor had described seeing that Tic Tac, remember? Mm-hmm. With the object just below the surface of the water. Or certainly the effects of an object below the surface of the water. So that was like, you know, but I think, like you just said, I think there's going to be a lot more coming out on, because, you know, we had Tim, excuse me, I got this cabinet popping out of my knees here. Tim Gallaudet, who testified also under oath, admiral, a rear admiral, about objects underwater. So I think we're probably going to see more of that in 2024. But wow. That's incredible. What do they call that? Transmedium, right?
Yeah.
So objects that can go through. It's incredible technology. Can you imagine? Like, you're up in outer space, you come in, fly around in the atmosphere, and then you go underwater and you can whiz around super high speeds underwater with all that push. How does that, you know?
It would just make sense. It doesn't matter if you're in space,
air
or water, that those things aren't affecting what you're in, and if that's the way these things operate. I imagine as a documentary maker, though, it's much harder to film one out in the water. Everything looks the same. And also filming underwater is far more difficult as well. So there are challenges around that I'm sure would come with a documentary piece like that.
Yeah, you know, I remember hearing this story, and I'm trying to remember exactly who I might have heard it from. It could have been George Knapp, but I might have heard some of it from Fravor as well. And definitely somebody else. But there was an object, I guess they were retrieving a jettisoned rocket or some part of the propulsion of a rocket that they shot up, and they were retrieving it with a helicopter in the ocean. Did you hear about this?
Puerto Rico?
I don't know where it was, but I do know that there was a gentleman on the end of the line. He was supposed to hook this piece, this jettisoned piece of the rocket, supposed to hook it with a cable, and then the helicopter, they're going to fly it back to the ship. And he saw a very dark object coming from underwater up, scared the living shite out of the guy. I guess he was telling the pilot to get him out of there. And then it grabbed the thing and took it underwater. It was gone. Yeah. I'm surprised more details of that haven't surfaced. I heard about that in like 2020, maybe.
That would be a very cool story. I know Richard Dolan's got he was writing a book on USOs that's turned into a 3-part series. I think he's got hundreds of cases, so those are due to come out soon as well. But really an interesting aspect of this whole thing. And I think it ties in really nicely with you're looking at crash retrieval programs because given what we're talking about, it's incredibly complex. These things crash or land in the desert or on land, it's one thing. But when they hit the water, that's a whole other story altogether, isn't it? The ability to go and retrieve those.
Yeah, I heard recently from someone definitely in a position to know that the vast majority of objects that we have retrieved have come out of the water. And there's a case actually that I'm just a firsthand witness that somebody was involved in pulling one of these out not that long ago, but I haven't met with this individual yet, but I'm going to. Excuse me, I'm going to. And I also was at Seoul. What is Seoul acronym? The Seoul Foundation. That's an acronym. I'm at scientific. What is it? Do you know what that stands for?
Oh, I do. And is it not? I've always just assumed it was like a. Soul meant sun, and it was like a, you know, new beginning or new dawn or something. Maybe I've just looked into it too deep. I've looked far too deep into it, maybe. But
well, anyway, I was at Seoul. We screened the program. It was great. And an individual came up to me and he introduced himself. And he said, myself and a number of other military personnel were stationed at Vandenberg Air Force Base in 2003. And we witnessed firsthand an incursion at the base. And they talked about orbs. They talked about a triangular shaped object the size of a football field that touched down on the base. And so I think I'm going to be meeting with them, finding out more details very soon about that as well.
So
2003, it's apparently pretty, they'd mentioned it one of the congressional hearings, I think possibly the David Grush hearing.
Jeff Nocitelli? I've hosted Jeff on the podcast and he has talked about it, but there were other individuals with him and then more folks involved in the background who weren't necessarily forthcoming, but there's a story there. Yeah.
My understanding is that two or three of them are going to come forward. That's the impression I got. I've been kind of focused on getting this film out for the next couple of weeks, but there are some other cases I'd like to stick my teeth into. And that being one of them, I'm actually thinking about doing an event at the National Press Club, kind of similar to what I did with Leslie Kane back in 2007. You know, because everything's happening so quickly right now, I feel like it would be more current to do an event at the National Press Club. I can document the whole thing and crank out a film on that and put that out immediately so people can really see this stuff happening more in real time.
We'll get to that, James. Just get the program out first, get some of your money back, and then you can move on to that one. Give yourself a couple of days rest. I want to take you back, though, because something that's brought up here is the Wilson-Davis memo. And I think in any piece on crash retrieval programs, you have to bring up. So this is a conversation that's been talked about many times on the podcast and others. You've talked about it previously between Admiral Thomas Wilson and Eric Davis, very well-known physicist, scientist. And it happened in a car park, in the back of the car, chatting about crash retrieval programs. Admiral Wilson has never come forward and never really spoken about this, but he always denied, including within the memo, if it's ever come out, I'll deny it, which is the standard line. Do you think the Wilson-Davis memo, though, has a big say in any potential official government disclosure still?
You know, I wrestled with that one, and I spent a lot of time trying to just kind of simplify the chain of events that occurred that led to that memo, you know, reaching out to Eric Davis, reaching out to Hal Puthoff, reaching out to staff members to find out what's happening with Wilson himself, Admiral Wilson. Like, that's the nice thing about that memo is that there are names in that memo, lots of names, and none of them are redacted, right? So it's funny, actually, because they didn't subpoena him, but they said, we want to bring you in to a skiff. This is fairly recently. And Admiral Wilson, wasn't he head of the DIA as well?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Anyway, Admiral Wilson said, well, I'm going to say the same thing in a skiff. I'm happy to come in, but I'll say the same thing in a skiff as I said, you know, as I'm telling you right now over the phone. So Admiral Wilson held true to that. He did say that if this ever leaks, I will deny it emphatically. And that's exactly what he's done. However, I don't know if you've noticed that other correspondence between Christopher Mellon and a high-level government official that appears towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, because that had come out and Chris had talked about that a little bit on his X feed. But he's like, hey, you know, James, if you want to include that in the movie, yes, I do. He's like, you really need to come to my house. We need to talk. I need to give you the background on this memo. So it's one of the things I'd stopped production and I'd gone back to filming for a number of follow-up interviews, that being one of them. But I'm told that an unredacted copy of that, and that's got names, particularly names of the gatekeeper, fairly recent, you know, just a couple of years ago. Those have been provided to select members of Congress and staff members. So I think even Burchett had seen an unredacted version of that. So they have, allegedly, they have the name of the gatekeeper right now. Or certainly was the gatekeeper fairly recently.
Do you think Wilson is still involved in any way, shape, or form in the UFO topic?
Sorry, yeah, getting back to that. I just... you know, I think it's one of those memos that triggered more digging that possibly led to other things would be my guess.
Okay.
But again, I was told, because I was like, well, look, a couple of things. I remember going, why doesn't anybody get the ICIG, Thomas Monheim, into a skiff? Because apparently he's given street addresses. He's given all the details needed to verify the claims from David Grush, you know, and apparently another person that that on the record, well, it's on the record, but whose name we have is Admiral Wilson. So I wouldn't have included that memo had I not believed it to be in a legitimate meeting and a legitimate memo. I as unfortunate as some people might say, the fact that it did leak out, I'm happy it did. And I think ultimately, I would imagine Eric Davis, despite what he would say publicly, I would imagine he probably feels a little relieved as well.
No, I would agree. And it gives people like me something to talk about, which is always fun. And anyone else who's interested in this subject, it's as close to a smoking gun as we have. It's tantalizingly close to getting that proper confirmation of here's one of these programs. And we seem to be getting more and more of those knocks at the door, don't we? I did like, quick sidebar, you have a public section in this where you've gone into the streets of Washington and you've stuck your microphone in people's faces, haven't you, and just said, what do you think of the UFO topic? Why was that important to you?
You know, if you look at some of the history of my previous docs, you'll see that I do that periodically. I like to get the beat on the street, you know. I like to get what the general public's thinking about. What do they know? What have they, I mean, did they know about these congressional hearings? How would it impact their life? Do they want to know, you know? I don't know. To me, it kind of brings it back down to earth, so to speak, you know, and makes it real, talking to the man on the street. And I've done that with the first UFO film I ever made. I did it with I Know What I Saw. I don't think I did it with Out of the Blue, but I definitely did it with I Know What I Saw. And I decided, hey, I'm in Washington. This is the epicenter of an unprecedented push for transparency. A lot of stuff's been going down. I was curious how many people knew about what was happening. And quite honestly, I was shocked to find very few knew that many details of what, you know what I mean? Like, how many people, if you go on the street right now and say, hey, did you know that a high-level intelligence officer testified under oath to a bipartisan group of lawmakers in an open congressional hearing? I bet you, 9 times out of 10, people don't know that it happened. Yeah. Right?
I agree, 100%, even more so in the UK. I think what really stood out for me with that part is a lot of folks watching this documentary will be new to the subject, which is wonderful, and it will get them involved. A lot of folks watching it will be well-vested in the subject. People listening to this podcast, maybe for the first time, most will know who you are, will know your previous work, and they'll be looking for new information from this. I like the fact they're getting to see the public who don't know about the subject, like you say. And there's a lot of assumptions in the UFO community that people just need to know. Actually, you've got people, the general public here, telling you, some of them, I wouldn't want to know regardless. Some would. Others are just like, no, it might be scary. I don't want to know. And I think people have to remember it's not as easy. And we'll get to a comment from I think, Hal Putov in the documentary about it's not just as easy as disclosing. There is so much to consider that actually there are probably good reasons to not disclose, or at least fully. So I thought that was a really well done piece, and it was important.
I'd never thought about the complexities of disclosure. Honestly, I've always, you know, for decades, I was like, hey, what's wrong with transparency? Tell us the truth. Wouldn't it be amazing? Wouldn't it be amazing to discover that we're not alone in the universe? It seems to be the age old question, right? And wouldn't that be great? And I remember, like, just a few years ago, this general laughing at me, you know, this naive kid, you know, young guy or whatever it was 10, 15 years ago, he was laughing at me. He goes, you don't understand how the military looks at this. It was the first time it ever got me thinking on the other side,
yeah,
from their perspective. He's like, you know, you've got objects of unknown origin whizzing around with impunity, exhibiting a technology that's light years advanced from what we have. You know, fly rings around our fastest jets, and we don't know where they come from, or who they are, or what they want. He goes, you think that we can just disclose that to the general public? Like, he kind of looked at me almost like he was laughing. That was the first time I thought about the complexities of potential disclosure, or at least releasing and discussing what we know, because it reveals so much that we don't know. And then Hal Putoff took it to a whole nother level in this film, where he talks about, you know, the crash retrieval stuff and lawsuits that would, you know, and just like,
yeah,
all the different things that need to occur prior to that. And I just had the opportunity to meet, I didn't talk with, but I was at a brief presentation that he gave, and that's Senator Rounds. Mm-hmm. And Senator Rounds said, this is not a 100-yard dash. We're running a marathon right now. Be patient. It's happening. You know what I mean? And I think that's exactly right. You know, there are certain things that need to happen as the information trickles out to the general public.
Yeah, I love that from Putov, saying that it was part of, I can't remember how he worded it, like a group or a working group, and they ran through a couple of dozen things that could potentially happen or would happen off the back of a disclosure. And like you mentioned, companies suing each other because company X has materials given to them by a US government. So now that technology is patented. That technology could then be released for commercial use. But that means companies Y and Z weren't given that from the government, which means their stocks then plummet and company X becomes the premier. All that kind of stuff. People might go, it doesn't matter. It does. That literally affects our entire world economy in an instant. Just coming out and saying we have this or we have that. So really interesting ways to think about it. And I've often said, James, that if you gave really prominent members of the UFO online community, influencers, whatever you want to call them, and I'll include myself in this, 5 minutes in a dark room with Halputov, who knows what he knows. And he gives you the option, I'm going to tell you everything I know. And after that 5 minutes says, now you can take this pill and forget everything I've just told you. How many folks would actually go, actually, I'd rather forget what you've just said because I didn't want to know that? I think a lot of folks would choose to forget it.
You know, I've been told things that I cannot reveal ever. And I don't know if my life is any better knowing those things because I can't share it. Because if I do, that'll be it. That'll be the end of my career. No one will ever trust me ever again. I can't talk about it publicly because I can't back any of it up. I have no evidence to support it. And I've honestly remember thinking not too long ago, is my life better knowing those things? I mean, I'm glad, I guess, I know them and I feel privileged to know them. But be careful what you ask for. You just might get it. And I don't know if my life is better. Look, I'm going to push for government transparency. And no matter how scary it is or whatever the reality may be, we're all entitled to it. But maybe there's a reason why a handful of people have decided not to give us the full picture. I was talking to somebody just a couple of weeks ago. It might have been at the Soul Foundation. Somebody that I believe would be in a position to know, who guesstimated that there are only about 20 people on the planet that have the big picture. Boy, I'd love to get the big picture. I really would. Screw it. Even if it's scary. And I'd like to get it out there to the public. I think we should all, right? Reality is reality. It's not going to change. It is what it is. You know, maybe there would be a little panic or maybe, I don't know, unsettling, or maybe it would have an impact on financial institutions or religious institutions. But hey, man, the reality is reality, and we should be entitled to it, I feel.
So the stuff you've been told, you're not going to tell me that. You've just said,
oh, I can't.
You're never going to. I even said,
can I say I heard it and not use your name? And no, you can't do that. I was like, okay, all right. Well, then I can't even talk about it at all.
But does knowing that influence your work?
Probably discreetly in unknown ways. Probably.
Any particular element, though, would you even go as far to say, when I'm doing this?
I'd be more inclined. Well, let's put it this way. I left in the Jason Sands.
Okay. That's a good place to actually. I'm going to move on to talk about that section now.
And
so
I'm going to be
segue.
And I know that I'm going to be criticized. I mean, I get criticized for no matter what I do. I mean, I have to remind the audience, it's like, you know, the last film I did is reporting on live aliens walking through the town of Virginia in broad daylight. That, if that's not crazy, you know, come on, I'm making some rather tall allegations. I mean, I try to do it in a way that, you know, gets people talking about it or to uncover more evidence to support it. But I mean, I reported on Jason Sands and some of the reasons why I reported on Jason Sands, I'm unable to talk about publicly what I really know or what I found out. I mean, I did make serious inquiries into that. I don't want to like put out information that I know is false. You know, I wouldn't do that. It's not what I'm about, but I did as much due diligence as I could behind the scenes. And some of the things that I found out ultimately led to the decision to keep him in. And I don't know, how do you felt? You watched the Jason Sands segment. Did it rub you the wrong way? Did you like what you saw? Like, how did you feel about it?
So I'll quickly fill people in, and correct me if I'm wrong here, James. This is the TikTok version of what happened. Was people found out Jason Sands was going to be a name of someone in your documentary. I think it was it through a picture or a still that was posted online? They saw a clipboard with Jason Sands on it, whatever. Before the release of this, Jason Sands has come out more publicly and basically jumped onto social media. He appeared on a Twitter or X space for a couple of hours and shared his story. And it was sort of unfiltered, uncensored. here's my thoughts, opinions. And that was part of the issue a lot of folks had, was he seemed to share his story, that he would say this is what happened, but also a lot of opinion got mixed in with that as well, and people then took that and ran with it, which you're obviously then, you must have been frustrated seeing that, because you've got this piece that you want to put in the documentary, which now has a different life of its own that you've not had control over, and it's come out. What I thought about that particular piece was, I'm glad you left it in, because I think you have to let people make up their own minds. The way I've looked at this Jason Sand situation, I'm happy to hear information like that. He is an individual. Even just listening today to Ross Coulthart and Bryce Abel's podcast, they mention the programme. They mention Jason Sands, and he is who he says he is. He did have that position. Ross Coulthart mentions he's a guy who worked out at Area 51 and whatnot. I would then say, look at David Grush. He is who he says he is. He had an incredibly high-level position. David Grush was just more reserved. He said some spectacular things, but there was a line he didn't cross. And I just wonder, is this a really good example from a PR point of view of David Grush done this the right way? And Jason Sands not appearing in the programme, but coming out on social media unfiltered and just going, bleh, wasn't the way to do this. And they're both pretty similar stories in a way, but they've got two very different perceptions. I'm glad it was left in, because I like to make up my own mind on these things. For me, very interesting. It's a story that I would need to trust people like yourself, that the due diligence is there, and there's a reason, like you say, this is left in. But I'm on the fence.
Well, yeah. So I have no one to blame but myself. I periodically post production updates and photographs and stuff of that nature. And I accidentally posted a picture of a clipboard that was in the scene. And if you zoomed in, it was written J, the letter J, Sands, S-A-N-D-S. I think it was like 10, 15, 20 minutes after the fact. My phone was blowing up, and it was like, you just revealed his name. I might have deleted, I think I probably deleted the post, and it was very frustrating for Jason Sands, and I felt terrible. Again, I have no one to blame but myself. I did not write his name on the clipboard. Somebody in production did, but I'm the director, and the buck stops with me. So again, it's my fault. But because of that, and I think that, you know, Jason was quietly for several weeks watching all this chatter online, and I just think that he just wanted to set the record straight and go on and join the chatter, which was shocking to me. But hey, he's a grown man, and I'm the one that blew his cover, so I'm not the one online. You know, like, I could see him wanting to set the record straight or to speak up. Now, during all this, I was meeting with staff members that were investigating House Select Committee on Intelligence, Senate Armed Service Committee members, and they were telling me off the record, this guy fully checks out, his credentials check out, he is who he says he is, he was where he says he was, and he has even named one individual told me that one of the names of the programs that he had mentioned, which I didn't even want to hear that name, that he got in trouble just for asking about it. So that the guy's like, look, man, he might have PTSD. God knows what he was subjected to during his time in the military, but that guy is who he says he is, and he has classified information that I have verified. Like, he's legit. So based on all that, during this time, he decides to apply for the DOPSER process. I have to look up what the acronym DOPSER stands for, but it's basically approval process for, you know, a potential media interview, or if you want to write a book. And so he got that process going. I don't know, it took him several months. And during that time, I was also got some help within the intel community and located the individual who debriefed all the other on-duty military folks that were with him during that encounter. So we had that was going on. I had the names of the other three on-duty military folks. I think it was two men and a woman. And we had the video that leaked out 3 days prior. There was an incident of an unknown object that was, and we got the radio chatter. I had that kind of cleaned up with a sound design guy, which made a lot of it audible. Mm. And so I was working on that, found the individual that that claims to have debriefed all four of them, maybe more because it was a convoy. But there was the head truck got the closest view because they're the ones that stopped right there and interacted with this individual. And that person didn't say it didn't happen. It didn't say it did happen. It was just like, there's no comment one way or the other. Then we, Jason Sands located one of the three individuals who responded and started a conversation, online. And as soon as we mentioned the encounter, that individual ghosted us. Okay. It wasn't like it didn't happen or it did happen. So because we have a date, because we have a location, because we have an individual, Jason Sands, who's now fully come forward, who's been approved by DOPSER, I decided to keep the story in, and with the hope that additional information will come out, because it's hard to find additional information on something that you don't know about. So the fact that he's putting his neck out, he's willing to testify, by the way, publicly, under oath. He's also willing to take a polygraph test publicly under oath to do all these things. So I think that we have his military records. We have photographs of him in the military. He served our country. And I don't think that he should be dismissed. In fact, I'm not sitting there making any definitive statements that it happened or it didn't happen. But I'm leaning on the fact that it probably did happen. And I'd like to see more evidence uncovered with this film coming out.
No, that's fair. And there was another whistleblower, US Navy X is the listing. We get the shot of someone from behind, so we don't know who they are. It says they're going through the process to come forward. And are they still intending on coming out publicly?
This individual has come, has met with staff members privately to reveal those details of what this individual knows, this individual has seen. And it's high resolution 4K video of UAP. Lots of it.
Are we going to hear about that publicly, do you think? Or is this something they want to keep private?
I think under the right conditions, that individual is providing the necessary details of where exactly this stuff is. And he's even released some of it in the film.
Okay.
Yeah, so... under the right conditions, yeah, will this individual come forward? Yeah, yes, publicly, yes, I'm sure. I'm sure that individual would, but I don't know if I don't know if this individual is comfortable enough with the current whistleblower protections.
Before we get to some listener questions, I'll fly through some other pieces that really stand out to me in the documentary, because there's a lot, folks. It's an hour and 42 minutes, and you have to watch to the end of the credits as well, because there's information coming through. It's like a Marvel movie where you get, you know, post-credit scenes and mid-credit scenes.
Don't
and everything.
You love that? I love that. Oh,
brilliant. You get your money's worth. But
yeah, I like that.
It flies along. There's a section stealing the truth. You've got Gary McKinnon. Now, this is a big get. If Kurt McConnell's a big get and doesn't come forward often, I emailed Gary McKinnon today while I was watching the program back, and just because I've messaged him a few times trying to play on the fellow Scotsman angle to get him on the podcast. Gary doesn't do very much, so well done getting Gary on. Gary McKinnon, if folks don't know, was a hacker back a couple of decades ago who allegedly found evidence in NASA's systems of unedited satellite imagery of UFOs and names of non-terrestrial officers, as he says. I love the fact he mentions the old 56K dial-up and having to take 5 minutes to download 1 megabit of data. And what he says he saw is like an image of what he believes is the Earth from space with a craft in front of it. And it only downloaded 2/3 before he was cut off. What's your take on the Gary McKinnon story, having sat in front of the man himself?
Well, I remember I was doing my second documentary, starting out of the blue, when that story broke, and I couldn't get to him because, I mean, it was, talk about a media circus. Mm. That was phenomenal. And I remember thinking to myself, now hang on a second, because in 2003, the United States government went to war invading Iraq over this claim of weapons of mass destruction in their possession, and yet there really wasn't any evidence of that. And then the British went along with it, right? Because of the connection between the Brits and the Americans. And so I thought, so if the Americans really wanted Gary McKinnon back to the United States, I would be kind of surprised if England denied him, denied the U.S. just because of the historical connection the two have. Or is it the fact that America didn't really want him back because it would be a very public, you know, media circus on what this guy saw and what they're in possession of? So I kind of wondered, was that sort of a tacit agreement between the two? We're going to put this thing, this little dog and pony show on? Maybe it was. But anyway, once it all sort of, you know, settled down a bit, you know, I reached out to him because he was on my list. I've always wanted to talk to him. And it's an extraordinary story. And I absolutely believe him. Absolutely believe him. I mean, the guy almost went to prison for life over trying to steal the truth. And I love that's one of the taglines in the film. One of the title sequences is stealing the truth. And that's exactly what he tried to do. Excuse me.
It's very interesting. And I'll let folks watch that and make up their own mind. But Gary, if you're listening, I would still love to host you. Maybe one day. I'm not getting an out and out no, but it's always pushed down the line. You move on to the photograph of the century, the Calvin photo. This is a famous photograph, folks, you may have seen, of the diamond-shaped craft in Scotland. It was published almost in the Scottish Daily Record back in the day. James, you may not know, you had, I think, a world first in your documentary here, where you may be the first person ever to put a Scotsman on camera and not subtitle them, and you allowed Craig Lindsay just to speak. And you didn't put the words of what he was saying underneath him. And I greatly appreciated that. You actually correct that later when you you have the iPhone interview from the gentleman who is very Scottish, I must say.
Why is a fucking ghost?
Yeah. and actually,
I love that line.
And do you know what? One of the subtitles, I'm pretty sure, is very slightly incorrect for him.
Oh, no.
But do you know what? No one will probably notice unless themselves are like very Scottish like me. But I'll tell you that one later on. It won't even make a difference, but it was just quite funny. But yeah, Craig Lindsay comes on. He had kept a print of the original Calvin photo back in the day. This is something you travelled all the way to Scotland for. Unfortunately, I couldn't meet up with you at the time when you were in the UK. But how much do you put into this maybe having legs still? Because we still don't have, as far as I know, and as far as you've said in the documentary, you've not brought the two witnesses forward, but you've come about the closest I've known anyone to getting hold or trying to get hold of those individuals who took this photograph.
I think first and foremost, David Clark deserves credit, major credit for making this all happen. David, thank you for your tireless investigations on this case. We would know next to nothing had it not been for all the work that David Clark has done. And David, at the truncated version, David found, I'll back up a little bit further. I had heard about this case in the late 90s or early 2000s from Nick Pope. He wrote about it in a book, Open Skies, Closed Minds. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to him early 2000s. I interviewed him for a number of different films. And then I did the event at the National Press Club in 2007, and he was part of that. And I remember pulling them aside, having drinks at the bar, and asking him, hey, what was one of the best cases you know? And he would always say, this case in Scotland and this photo. I was like, where's the photo? Oh, we used to have a big print of it on our wall. We interviewed the people and this, and there's no way we ever wanted it out because it had a military jet and yada, yada, yada. So you got two witnesses, broad daylight, six prints, 35mm prints, right? My God, this is the case, right? This is the photograph that we've all been waiting for. And of course it disappears, right? So thank God to Craig Lindsay. And I'd have to say that This is the most information ever seen in one place on this case. No question about it. We've got, you know, Nick Pope, and Nick Pope had to be careful, skirt some of the issues that potentially could still be classified because the MOD made every effort possible to squash this. And it's the first time that we've seen a connection with the U.S., some unknown U.S. government agency who came in and silenced those witnesses. I mean, thank God for Richard Greaves, you know? Thank God that he decided to break his silence after all these years. And look, again, this is one of those cases where we've got the photograph. We've got two people now that know the, that interviewed or know the photographers, right? The witnesses. We're missing the witnesses. The chances are they were quite young at the time. They're going to be my age, which is like mid-50s. And the chances are, if they're still alive, they might see this and decide to come forward. This is an ongoing thing, just like Virginia. People think that I've given up on Virginia. No, I haven't given up on Virginia. I'm going back to Virginia next month. I'm working as hard as I possibly can. I followed up probably 500 emails on potential contacts, whittled it down to like 11 people. This is an ongoing thing. I don't, you know what I mean? I'm not going to just like start on something and then just forget about it. No, I will go until I can't go anymore, just like I have with every other case. So I think the Calvine, you know, UFO case is one of the best photographic cases in the world, personally. And I think that that pilot possibly is still around, right? How old would that pilot now be? The pilot was probably fairly young who scrambled that jet. That guy's
50, 60.
Easily, right? Because he would have been, let's say he was in his mid-20s. Maybe he could have been as old as 30. And that was what, 30? Could be the late 50s, early 60s. Yeah, somewhere between 50 and 60. I'd like to see that person come forward. Imagine the information that that person has. So any case, that's an ongoing case. And I think it's fantastic. And thank you, Craig Lindsay, the RAF press officer, you know, who came forward. And again, David Clark got a redacted document through the FOIA request or whatever you guys have over in England. And that said, RAF press officer Scotland, blank, 1990, or who's the RAF press officer, you know, boom, that name pops up, contacts him. I don't know how long it took, a year, two, three, but for Craig Lindsay to finally come forward, and that was the only on-camera interview he's ever given. And it's great.
Your only challenge you've got there, James, is in Scotland, 50 to 60 is about the average life expectancy. So, I mean, if you tried any breakfast while you were there, you probably know that. So, yeah, but I think there's potential for more from that. And it is fascinating. And it is a wonderful photograph as well. And I can assure you, folks, it's certainly not a small piece of land in the middle of a lake. I don't know if you ever saw this, James, where people said it was someone in a rowing boat. I get if you look at it like it's a magic eye picture, you can go, yeah, that could be. It's not a reflection, folks, for the love of God. And you've probably in the documentary, James, got the best footage I've seen of the area itself. It's actually cleared up in my head what that particular area looked like, because I've only ever had the descriptions of it. So that was really nice to see. And if folks think they're going to watch this and not see anything new, there's a lot of new information in here. So I was very much happy with that as well. I'm going to rush through that kind of last part, because otherwise I'm just talking about every single thing that happens in the documentary and I've missed loads already. Little comment made by Chris Mellon towards the end about landed and crashed UAP. There's a real differentiation there, if that's the word, around a craft having landed of its own accord. And they used, I think, Kingsman as the example in Arizona. And crashed UAP.
Yeah.
What kind of conversations are you having with these folks? And what's your understanding about why these would be landed craft and we're still retrieving them, as opposed to them having hit the ground and broken up and we're retrieving them?
I remember when I was, because I got a rough cut of the film done. I'm not sure what month it was. And we went back to some additional filming, follow-up filming, because there had been some new developments, and one of which was this memo, this correspondence that was approved by Dopser that Chris Mellon had with a high-level government official. It talks about, landed or crashed UAP. And I told this particular intel person that I was in touch with, oh, yeah, I'm going back to to meet with Chris Mellon about this this document that he has. Talks about a case, specific case, 1953, Kingman, Arizona. This individual was like, yes, good, yeah. I'm really glad you're doing that. I was like, okay, yeah. Well, that's a really, really good one. And then I learned that, according to this individual who I trust, that the craft had just basically come down and landed and the occupants left. I said, well, how do you know the occupants left? Because the doors were open. So they landed the object, kept the doors open, and just left. Yes. Not a scratch on it. That came from three different people that I talked to. So apparently the Kingman, Arizona case, the object didn't have a scratch on it. Like it was literally, it landed. It was like a gift. 1953 Kingman, Arizona. You know, I think I investigated that case a little bit back in 2012, 2013, but I was also investigating Socorro and Rua and Virginia. So I didn't really put a lot into that and I couldn't really find any firsthand witnesses at the time. So I was very intrigued by that case, but I put a pin in it. But apparently and another thing I've been learning recently is that a lot of retrievals have taken place in the oceans.
Yeah.
Like they pulled a lot of stuff out of the ocean. And there's a case that happened fairly recently that I'm in touch with an individual that was involved with a fishing boat with that particular case.
And you wonder how much maybe under the ocean just resting there waiting for us, or indeed in the ice, if folks love a bit of Antarctica, don't they? How much might be out there just sitting about waiting on folks. Last thing, James, you've got a beautiful shot, and unless this is stock footage, either way, of Lockheed Martin, but in the top right-hand corner, a full moon.
We shot that.
Yeah, beautiful shot. I don't know how long that took you to sit there and wait on that shot. But
well, let me tell you, I shot a bunch of B-roll in and around the Area 51 base. Then I had to go from there to drive to Lockheed Martin, get that shot, and then I had to drive up to meet with Gary Nolan, I think the next day. So we were racing from one location to the other, screaming down the freeway, trying to get to Lockheed. And I remember my camera guy was like, man, the sun's going down. This is I said, look, man, I'm already risking speeding tickets for the last 5 hours. I'm going as fast as I can. We literally pulled up into that dirt little parking area, skidding the tires, doors fling open. Everyone rushes out, sets up the cameras, sets up the tripods. Boom, we get this beautiful shot. You know, we're just rolling camera, the sun's setting, really pretty shot. Then all of a sudden a full moon shows up. And we just couldn't believe it. Like it was like 1 in 100 million shots of Lockheed Martin. And David West is my camera guy, and he is a phenomenon. And he is one of the best people getting B-roll. Have you noticed the B-roll that we got in the film all throughout Washington, D.C. area? We got permits. We got a big moving van from Texas, drove all the way across the country with a whole huge van filled to the gills with equipment. We did these motion time-lapse photography for 5 weeks all across D.C., I mean, I spent a third of the budget of the movie on B-roll. And I'm glad you mentioned that shot because it looks like something that created out of a Steven Spielberg movie or something, right?
Yeah, it was if a picture could speak, that was an amazing shot. All you had to do was leave it on there. And it's a very telling shot, I imagine. You're talking about crash retrieval programs. Yep. You've got Lockheed Martin. And you've got the moon, this mysterious object that has all kind of connotations for the UFO topic. I take it very deliberate leaving that in there, not just a pretty shot, but and it's right toward the end of the film as well. Yep.
Very intentional. Yeah.
So when folks watch this, and I wonder if folks are newer to the UFO subject and if folks are more educated, more well-versed, what do you want each of those sets of people to take away from watching the program?
Well, It's the most independent production I've ever done from top to bottom. No executives, no distribution company. This is all us. I want to say something before I forget, and I'll get to the other thing in a minute. The film is going to be up for purchase only for the first 2 weeks, and it's not going to be cheap. It's going to be $19.99, and I understand that's expensive. People wanted me to create a GoFundMe, but I'm not going to ask for free money. I said if I'm in a foreign prison and I need help getting out, then you can set up a GoFundMe and help me get out of prison. But I'm a big guy. I'm a big boy, and I could pull myself up by the bootstraps. This is as independent as I've ever done in the 30 years of production. If you can afford to pay the 20, pay it. If you can't, wait 2 weeks and we'll make it available for rental. It'll be much cheaper. We're just trying to recoup, our investment on that. And what I want people to walk away from is that there is an unprecedented effort taking place right now in Washington, D.C. to push for government transparency on what could turn out to be the most significant discovery of our time. And we should support those elected officials and continue supporting those elected officials until this all comes out.
And right now, we're going to fly through some listener questions. Actually, I'll leave how to get it again just at the end, because so many folks, James, you can imagine, got in touch wanting me to ask you things. And this is peek behind the curtain, folks. We're recording before the release date, so folks haven't been able to ask questions around the content, which will be nice for you to go and watch. I'm stealing the first listener question, James. I've asked you this every single time I've spoke to you, and I'm going to keep up my run. Are we going to see that Chuck Clark footage?
I got asked that earlier today. I saw it actually a year ago, right here at this table where I'm sitting. A guy came and showed it to me, and it was really degraded. It was still impressive. Like, there was part, it looked like it was edited and degraded. And I said, well, how did you get this? And the individual said, well, I contacted Chuck Clark. Long story. I basically said, look, for preservation purposes only, this needs to get digitized and cleaned up using software. So he was in the process of doing that. And he showed it to me, and I was like, this is nowhere near as good as what I remembered. But there were aspects of it that was still the glowing object doing this. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's right. It seemed like it had been edited down. But again, this is another one of those stories. I know that Logan Paul was talking about releasing his, but he's like, it's good, but it's not that great.
Yeah.
And Chuck Clark publicly said, I'm going to sue your ass if you print this. Now, since all that has gone down, I went out to Area 51. I was part of a conference where I got invited to go to Area 51 with a group on a bus. And so I went out there and I talked to some people out at the Little Alien, because that's where Chuck Clark had it. He used to live out there by the Little Alien for well over a decade, might have been two decades. And so they all know about that footage. They've all seen it. And the woman looked at me and I started talking to her about it. Who's the person that shot it? And she said, this is the daughter of the owner. She said, do you think we're that stupid we didn't make a digital copy of it back then? So I'm hoping that enough people put enough pressure on. I tried to get George Knapp to go after it. Chuck Clark was willing to meet with George Knapp, and George Knapp has done things with him in the past, exposés and things of that nature, late 90s, early 2000s. So, George Knapp was going to go do that. He got busy. I don't know. So to answer your question, do I think it'll come out? I do. I do think it'll come out, and I won't stop trying. I don't know. I don't know when. I don't know when.
It'd be nice bonus content on one of your features. So I'd pay the $19.95 just for that. So.
Hey, man, I've been trying to, yeah, believe me, I don't give up on things. I put a pin in them and I come back to them.
I've got so much on my head, and I've said this before, I won't waste listeners' time because this is their time. But in my head, what that looks like, I need to see it because I've got so much like this is... Yeah. And yeah, anyway, listen, let's move on to the listener questions. Valise, how many additional whistleblowers does James know of who refused to be interviewed for the program?
Well, all I know is that there's been roughly, I think it's just under a dozen that have come forward behind the scenes, firsthand witnesses behind the scenes that don't feel that the whistleblower legislation that has been signed into law is enough for them to come forward publicly yet. So I'm told that somewhere around a dozen, maybe under a dozen, have come forward behind the scenes. First-handers, people that are involved in working on the technology.
James, a lot of folks put at the start of their question to say thank you for your work, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll leave all the nice comments off so we can get through the questions. Just assume they're all there. Valise also asked, what's the latest on James's efforts to obtain the historical video featuring a live alien from the Virginia incident?
So I've been in touch with people, both on Proton and on Signal. And I've been dealing with people that have been like, I don't want any money, fly out here and meet with me. But I'm like, I am really busy and I'm just going to fly based on, I'm going to fly to Brazil and fly way north and meet with you. I don't know who you are. Like, are you real? Do you have it? I mean, these individuals have actually taken photographs of themselves. I say, put my name on the thing and show me your fake, you know, that kind of thing. So that's an ongoing effort as well. I've whittled it down from hundreds of emails down to probably 11 contacts that I feel like could yield some results. So I'm going back as it stands in January for the anniversary, and we'll see if anything pans out.
Peter says, James, there is a program that bypasses constitutional controls in the US and absorbs trillions of tax dollars. In your opinion, who is really in charge of the US?
Well, it's funny. I mean, there's no question that there seems to be a government within a government controlling this stuff. That, you know, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to believe that. I mean, like, case in point, I kept hearing reports of these men in suits that show up, have an omnipresent, you know, no matter what country, they seem to show up and sanitize, threaten, intimidate. So I've known about these folks probably since the 90s, from firsthand witnesses. And then, you know, you get these inquiries coming in from presidents and stuff like that. And sorry, someone's trying to blow me up here. That's and okay. And they're not happy with the answers they're getting. So it's clearly like, you know, our elected officials are not in control of this. So that just points to the fact that who is? I just recently asked the question to somebody that I trust that would have the answers. And they said that there were either 20 or under 20 people that have the big picture of what's going on and that are really controlling this. But it does make you wonder. It's like, these folks aren't elected. They're calling the shots. I just met with the new head of Arrow, John Kosklowski, mm-hmm. who told me that, look, man, I can't even part my hair without the DOD approving that. So he's basically saying, you know, I could find out whatever I find out, but I can't share it with the public unless it's approved by the DOD. Well, who can override that? I think maybe it has to be executive action, but I mean, have presidents been intimidated? Maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say, man. I'm uncovering these things as you guys are, right?
Do you think the incoming president will make a difference then?
You know, think what you want about President Trump. Everyone's got opinions on him. But if anyone was going to do it, I think he'd be likely the guy to do it. I certainly got the impression from people that know him that he would be willing to do it, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll see what kind of pressure he gets. I'm sure he'll get debriefed. Who knows what they're going to say to him?
Tim says, great meeting James at Saul. I loved seeing the movie early. Obviously at Saul, they played a preview of the program. Who does James think is responsible for disclosure? Is it the scientific community, the government, filmmakers, or something else?
I think it's going to be all of us. I do. I think it's going to be all of us. I never thought that I would be playing any kind of role in disclosure as small as it is, but it's important for people like yourself. You're doing podcasts, documentaries, people on the outside, keeping the pressure on, knowing that our elected officials get support from the community. That's important to them. We have to keep the pressure on our representatives in a way that shows our support. And just keep the pressure on, because we're living in unprecedented times right now. I don't think they're putting the genie back in the bottle. This is coming out.
As part of that unprecedented times, a lot of folks have asked for your thoughts on the drone sightings in New Jersey, particularly right now. What are your thoughts on what's going on there?
So I personally, I have not put boots on the ground, okay? And you're talking to somebody who believes unequivocally 100% that these things exist, truly unidentified aerial phenomena, right? Things that exhibit a technology that's light years advanced from anything that we have, fly rings around our fastest jets, don't make hardly any noise, hover, accelerate from a standstill to out of sight in the blink of an eye, right angle turns, high speed. So far from what I've seen and what I've heard, they don't quickly eliminate anything conventional. Technologically superior, yeah, things that can stay aloft for hours. I mean, my drone, I've got a pretty sophisticated drones that I use professionally for all my films. I'm lucky to get 25 minutes out of them. These are up there for hours. And in some cases, I'm hearing the F-16s are trying to intercept these things unsuccessfully. That's weird. That certainly raises red flags for me in terms of something truly exotic. But the fact that the videos that I've seen sound like either like helicopters or loud SUV size drones as of right now. So what is that? I don't know. Could be a foreign power. I really don't know.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
By the way, I right now haven't seen enough. Last couple, James. Human Neutrino says, of all the interviews and testimony James has compiled and listened to, what, in his opinion, has been the most compelling?
Probably the individual that I interviewed for Virginia case, because I was quite convinced that he drove an alien, and looking into his eyes and listening to his testimony, that was a wow moment. I've had a number of wow moments, but that, when you track an individual down that you're pretty damn certain that's the guy that you want, and then you go to great lengths just after, for several years, my team, Marco Leal, that's pretty intense. When you're looking into the eyes of someone and you go, that guy probably drove an alien around, that's a pretty indelible impression. My career, I'd have to say, if there was one moment, and I've got a number of moments, but that was pretty incredible. You guys didn't get to see his eyes. I did. And what it took to get that individual to come forward. It was just a miracle. I mean, that we had an opportunity. We had a sliver of time, razor thin, and we just got in there and got it.
Yeah, I like that. And final question, Yes No Maybe asks, is there anything recently that's given you hope the tide has turned towards disclosure?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything that's happened from 2020, 2017 to date. You know, I know that people sometimes feel that, you know, things are taking longer than it should, or there's a big nothing burger on the last congressional hearing. So, you know, we did have Intel guy testify under oath. There are penalties for lying to Congress under oath that there's a crash retrieval program. Now, that's twice in the last, 2 years or less? Or I don't know what it's been. July of 2023 was Grush. And then what were we? Was it December or November? November, right?
Yeah, for the recent hearings.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot's happening, a lot continues to happen, and I don't think they're putting the genie back in the bottle. I really don't. And we're going to keep the pressure on. I'm certainly going to keep the pressure on. I'm already thinking three steps ahead about what I'm doing with this once this film drops in a couple, you know, well, now it is by the time you've seen this. But yeah, so I'm cautiously optimistic that that we're going to have disclosure in the coming years. I just believe that. In fact, it's already, in some respects, it's already happening.
Well, on that, James, what are you working on next? Have you got your head in the game yet for the next thing, or is it just focusing on the program and its release now?
Well, the next couple of weeks, I'm focusing on the program, but after that, next month, I'm going back to Brazil. And then after that, I'm probably going to be doing an event at the National Press Club, similar to an event that I did in 2007. Pretty sure I'm going to do that.
That would be good. I've kept saying I'm going to threaten to come out to the US at some point and meet some of these folks I've interviewed. So that would be a good opportunity, I think, to do that. But listen, James, final chance. How would you like folks in the first couple of weeks to get their copy of the program to support you best?
Apple TV, Vimeo, iTunes, Amazon. Is it Hulu? Might be on Hulu. But yeah, I would say Apple TV, Amazon, iTunes, Vimeo would be where I would go to look up. But you'll be able to Google it as well.
Awesome. James, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the program. Genuinely up there, probably the best UFO documentary I've seen this year. I really enjoyed a couple of them, but this one, as I expected, has all the hallmarks of a James Fox documentary. But there's a lot in there for folks who are new to the subject, and there's stuff there for folks who are more well-versed in it too. So very well done, and I look forward to your continued work. And folks, go buy it. Help James out, given what he's went through, and you heard at the start of the podcast. He deserves it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you inviting me on.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You're due for your biannual cleaning, something you usually forget and would rather not remember. But you just got a reminder from the dentist you look forward to seeing. The Gentle Dentist, the only dentist you're happy to come back to. The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. How can we make you smile? Call 614-431-3311.
Life's better with American Family Insurance. Because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.